time of Yichias. Yes. The time of the deed. Time of the deed. Sluso de the rabbin iso the kaddish. Sluso de the rabbin iso the kaddish Israel. If sluso that is in the you sluso is in rabbin, that means that you say it in a congregation in a minyan. We say mekadesh Yisroel. Kiddush, whether it is Shabbos or Yom Tov. Kiddush the Yochid iso, but kiddush that is said as a Yochid. Now, with it, the word iso here means it is. What it means, Slisu de Barabi iso, the amido which is can be said in Rabbi or is said in Rabbi. It means it can be said privately also. But it is said in Rabbi Mitzkot, that's there we say Mekadesh Yisroel. I say I want to say Mekadesh Yisroel because it's said in the minyan. So we use Kadesh Yisroel. Kiddush to be Yochid Yisro, but Kiddush, the whole thing is Kiddush that it's said privately, the Shabbos, Mekadesh HaShabbos, but the Yom Tov Mekadesh Yisroel Vazmanim. On Shabbos, I would say it's Mekadesh HaShabbos, but the Yom Tov, I would say it is Mekadesh Yisroel Vahazmanim.
I lost you again.
What's the difference?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm coming at you.
We also make Kiddush Yeshiva also.
Yes. Do you make Kiddush Yeshiva in your shul?
Yes.
But
I mean,
it
we
says,
have that in something. Yeah,
yes. But, yes. But it said, but what's the Iko?
So the Orkin.
So what, where's the Iko Kiddush?
Yep. At home.
At home. For the tefilo, where is the Iko tefilo?
In shul.
Davening with the minyan. The Iko, that's what it means by Iso.
But that's only if you're davening with the minyan.
But if you're not davening with the minyan, then you should be davening with the minyan.
Right.
So where's the Iko? Is it with the minyan or without the minyan?
With the
minyan. The Iko is the main thing. Well, Kiddush, even if you made it at shul, you've got to come home and make it there. So the Iko is at home. Got it? Right. Now, I've got to retrace my steps here. So, Robert says, and time of the deed, when you look at it from there.
Right, I'm looking tomorrow?
Yes, time of the deed. He says, and my time is, Sluso de Berabim Iso, the prayer that is said in Rabim, that is its real place. Mekadesh Yisroel. There I say Mekadesh Yisroel. But Kiddush, but when it comes to Kiddush, Dibe Yochid Iso, which is in Yochid, the Shabbos, I would say Mekadesh HaShabbos. I would say Mekadesh HaShabbos because he can't say Israel because it's not
in the rabbi.
You see, it's done alone. But the Yom Tov, but when on Yom Tov for Kiddush, I would say Mekadesh Israel VeHazmani. Just a bit. I'm sorry. Time of the day. My reasoning is Tluso when it comes to the Amido, Diba Rabin Iso, which is in Rabin, Mekadesh Yisroel. So, Kiddush Diba Yochid Iso, the Shabbos, Kiddush that is the Yochid, the Shabbos I would say Mekadesh HaShabbos, which is absolutely right, and the Yom Tov, I can't say Mekadesh, the Yom Tov, on Yom Tov, I would say Mekadesh Yisroel VeHazmanim. Why do I bring in Mekadesh Yisroel VeHazmanim in Yom Tov? Because in Yom Tov I can't say that Mekadesh HaZmanim. Baruch Atu Hashem Mekadesh HaZmanim, because it's not true.
Right.
So I've got to say Yisroel VeHazmanim. That is the...
How is it different than the... The Rav is different than only one case.
Right.
Only the case of Shmona Esrei on Shabbos.
On Shabbos, right.
That's the only way he makes it.
Otherwise, it's the same thing.
And the same thing. But the, he gives
you're telling me he has a, also he has a different sfora when he davens. He has a different sfora entirely.
He has a different sfora.
So there were different kinds of davening at the time.
Well, look here. Do you think that when we say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melekeinu V'Seinu Melekeinu Avraham Melekeinu Yitzchok Melekeinu Yaakov, when you and I say that, do you think we've got the same kavanos as the Chofetz Chaim had?
You are not saying.
I don't know. You think we've got the same kavanos as the Chofetz Chaim? Of course we haven't got the same kavanos. The kavanos, of course, is not the same. But you follow the reasoning here. Says the Gemara Baloti, and it's not so. Sluso beyochi mi lesei bekidusha berabi mi lesei. So the Gemara says it's not like that. Because Slusa be Yochid needs, let's say, cannot the Yochid daven Shemel be Esra, the Kiddusha be Rabbi, let's say. And isn't the Kiddush said in Rabbi?
So
me, let's say, is it there not? Let's say is the opposite of Esau. Esau is positive and Lesa is negative.
Mm-hmm.
The Rova Sovar, and Rova is of the opinion, Zil Boso Iko. Let us go after that which is the main thing. The main thing is that Kiddush is, the Tzluso, the prayer is in Rabin. That's the main thing. And the Kiddush, the main thing is in Yochid. Mm-hmm. We'll have to end it here, because I've got to do the Rashbam also. Now, Mark, how much of Kuf Yud Gimel Omid Beis have I got to finish to catch up the part that I have left out of the time?
I think the Mishnah
puts
it down.
As far as that.
Well, that's up till there is all the benefit.
You can do it next time.
Oh, I see. Until of Kuf Yud Gimel Omid Beis, that's right. Oh, that's not Mark. Oh, that's what I'll be able to finish. All right, we'll have to end it there. This isn't difficult, really, because we know how we paskin. We paskin that on Shabbos we say Mekadesh HaShabbos,
yeah,
whether it is in the Tefillah or in the Kiddush, and on Yom Kippur we say Mekadesh Yisroel Vazmani, whether it is in the Kiddush in the Tefillah, and we've got the reason here, because we paskin like Sabi Tchum V'Tisa, because on the Shabbos is fixed, so we say Mekadesh, Hashem is Mekadesh HaShabbos. But Yom Kippur depends on us. There's Mekadesh Yisroel. Hashem is first of all Mekadesh Yisroel. And once we've got the Kedusha, then we are allowed to make Yom Kippur whenever we like. Follow. I can never understand why the Reform never caught on in this. They regard themselves as authorities, as the authority. They regard themselves as authority. Let them make it whenever they like.
Let them what?
Let them make it whenever they like. Let them shift Rosh Hashanah to the 1st of January. They can make it when they, why didn't they do it?
Well, they shifted Shabbos to Sunday.
Shabbos, they can't. It's against the deal.
You don't want to go with that. You don't want to go with that.
There are three things for which Hashem is Ohazon. It's all things which are in the negative. Misha eno mishtake, or misha eno kois, misha eno mishtaker, misha eno mamid al midota. On those things which says who does Hashem hate, they're all positive.
Yes.
It's a poor man who is arrogant,
yes,
a rich man who is a miser,
yes,
and an old man who is a flirt.
Yes.
Why is it structured in this way? That all the ones for the hatred are things that one is doing positively, and all the ones for love are things where one is doing is saying one who does not do
is a really remarkable amazing game. It's in the Shalit Shiva, then I began to lay my hands on it without having to search for it. But it works out like this. Works out like this, that there is something very special about not giving way to a time. to a lattice, to a new lattice, is something pretty special. Now, here. Pardon?
I just think I just came across something from Rabbi Miller from Gates Head on in this regard.
In that regard, yes. There's something very special about that. The tsar that a person has in not doing something, just a bit, these are all things. Man gets angry and he conquers himself and he doesn't get angry. There is something very special about that. The tsar that the person has is not giving way to it. The struggle that he has wants to do this, and the struggle he has in not doing it, that is something very special. Yes.
When I saw Rabbi Miller was in Parsha Tamor, it was concerning that the pasuk in Ruth that Naomi makes reference to the chesed that you have done with my dead and with me.
Yes.
And the Ruth Rabbah talks about that Ruth and Orpah did not insist on their rights to the ketubah. And the question is, well, Naomi was destitute. What difference does it make?
Yes.
And the way he explained it, if I understood it correctly, is that when a person forgoes something that they're entitled to, they don't get any noble feeling about it. There's no one's going to think they're a big tzaddik for it. You don't get this when you go out and you do some great action, you feel very good about it.
Yes.
When you refrain from something, you don't get any uplifting from it. And yet it's still that's part of what makes it a great action.
There is also along those lines. But that is it. There is the fum tsaru agro, that the reward is according to the pain. And there is great pain, sometimes there's great pain in all this. If a person doesn't do what he wants to do, that is with the Rebbeinu Shleiman, that is there's something very special about it. Yes, Robert?
Because the whole point of free will is being able to not do something.
That's right. That is the whole point of it. To do what you want to do is no chokhmah. Who can't do that? That anybody can do what he wants to do. The whole is not to do what you want to do. That is the whole. That is the whole idea of free will.
Well,
I'm sorry,
to do what you don't want to do would also fall into that category. To do what you don't
want to
do, but it's...
Not to that extent, you see. As not to that extent.
Well, one of the things that seems to me...
You see, if I don't want to do something, and I do it. If I don't want to do and I do it, how does that compare with when I want to do something and I don't do it? If I don't want to do it, and I force myself to do it, if I don't want to do it, then that is wrong. The real thing is to do it and I do it. On the other hand, when I want to do something wrong, so I'm overcoming something that I want to do is wrong. I'm not overcoming something that is wrong when I do what I don't want to do.
Well, except for any mitzvah to say that you don't want to do it.
But if a person doesn't want to put on his tefillin in the morning, so... He exercises such extraordinary discipline, he puts it out. Big deal. What did he do?
Right.
You say.
Well, how about making a more difficult one? Like honoring your father when you have a difficult time with your father, if your father is always making what you think are unreasonable demands or something like that, and you don't. Well, that would be his don't. But let's say he, except that Let's say that you, he asked you to do something, and or in a particular situation where it was very difficult for you to do emotionally, you did it anyway. That would be a very
don't think that I'm sitting in judgment here. It's not anything like that at all. I understand it very, very well. We are living in a time where we are brought up in a way to believe that our parents have got no rights over us whatsoever. And they're always unreasonable as far as we're concerned. And as soon as we can shake off any relationship with them, the better we will be to be for us. Well, you know, the tale of you isn't that bad at all. See, the tale of you, there's nothing that can be too much for a child to be for a parent. It's such an opportunity. You follow?
I would say that that's harder to do.
You're right, it is. If the father would ask the child to break a deal, that's another thing, but he's not supposed to do that, you see. But, I mean, that's already abnormal. That's already, you know, it's, part of our work has been to take a very heavy locomotive that is on a set of rails. Not only is it on a set of rails, but it's got a whole line of carriages and trucks that it is pulling. And the trucks are laden. And there is a magnet between the wheels and the lines. And we've got to take all this off and put it onto another set of lines trained altogether another direction. That's really what it amounts to. And this has been most, I might even mention something else to show you how far things have gone astray and how difficult it is to do that. You can imagine a thing like this. How do we know that Kabbalah's Torah is true? And we take it that there's just no question about Kabbalah's Torah. I'm sorry, I'm sitting there. Please excuse me. That Kabbalah said that Torah was given min ha-shamayim at Chazir. Nevertheless, according to the Kuzri actually just, he says, how do you know that the Torah is true? Because it's gone from generation to generation, right up to the present time, which is his time, you see. Each father has told his child and has cut down the effect. This was such a great event that each parent told what had happened. Now, about 250 years ago, they started a new system altogether in the Jewish world. It had existed in the non-Jewish world, it was always there. But that it crept right into the Jewish world. It broke through Jewish defenses. It made a breach in the wall of Jewish defenses, and it broke through. A child had that connection with the outside world where he lost that respect for his parents. That was the first time it happened. Once he lost that respect for his parents, what he also lost was this link. Who says it's true? Who says it's true? As far as the parent was concerned, of course, it's true. How did you know it's true? My father told it to me. How did he know it's true? He told his father told it to me. Now, I remember very clearly, I suppose my first teacher in Torah was my mother. And I knew from where she got it. She got it from her parents. To me, it was just open up that it was just, this is being handed down and this is what I got. Now, that's about 250 years ago that was broken. Those were the first inroads, that was the first inroad that was made. And then, once those inroads were made, all sorts of things happened. But that was it. That, it happens to be all that. I'll show you in a moment. I'll give you an example of something else also apropos of that. So we've got to realize when you say, your father, if your father tells you something that is unreasonable, you know, the child has to have an operation. And that he knows what they're going to do. And the father tells the child, my child, this is for your good. That's just clever, you see, it's clever. I'm just telling you this for what it is worth. I know, Glenn, please, I know all the difficulties. I've gone through all this. I've handled this for so long. I've got all through this. I know what parents are today. I know that parents are not what they should be. I know that. And we just have to make allowances for all this sort of thing. And in spite of it all, the deen is that that respect has got to be for parents.
Yeah. So all I'm saying is that maybe it's a modern problem, but assuming that we have a certain past history going in the direction that we should be going, combining that with the fact that our parents perhaps shouldn't be what aren't what they should be, and demands are made, or even just rerouting the train and the effort that it takes to actually go and do something as a result would be
the effort to do something which is good is not comparable with the effort not to do the good. Gates of his there. You're a young person, you know what it is.
But can't a nature compel you to sloth, which would be...
What does that mean?
To be indolent.
To do?
Absolute.
Absolute, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Absolute.
Yes, but it's not such a... It's not such a great nature.
Uh-huh.
You can't compare the two. You can't compare the two. But I must tell you, but that also, if a person... It's difficult for him to do it. And he does. He's got to put on his tefillin, and the people laugh at him and make a fool of him. And he goes, this is something very special. With the Rebbeinu Shleilam, it's something very special. This goes into Messina's message already. With the Rebbeinu Shleilam, it's very special. And what he does for the person concerned, that he's got to go through that, what he does for him. I've been giving to the women I've been giving shiurim, and I've explained to them, I've been showing them the various cases. You know, we know the damage that Loshon Hara can do to a person. How does one come back? Don't listen to Loshon Hara. But you've listened to it already. Before you get a chance, you know what it was, it's done. So you've had it already. What one has to do is, there must be a ma'aseh keneged. There's got to be an action against that. Rebut it. I know it's not like that. I had a very great friend.
That invites more.
Rabbi,
look
that,
here.
That's begging for the end.
Then you take the next step, my dear fellow. I want you to know that you have not denigrated the person concerned. You have fallen in my estimation. I would advise you not to fall any lower. I'd like to see you go on after that.
Rabbi?
I'd like to see you go on after that.
Rabbi, you say...
Let me go on after that.
Rabbi.
Make a statement like that. I'd like him to see him go on after that.
True, but
I had a.
You can only say that to a member of the Torah system.
No, you just tell a person. Just tell a person.
But not to
that he has dropped. But now you've dropped in my estimation. I would advise you not to say anything more. You've dropped so fairly as possible.
Rabbi,
you see what happened.
Not that it would happen, but I suppose that you couldn't say to your father.
No, you couldn't say to your father, but you can make a rebuttal of it to your father, that you can, you see.
I'm just wondering how far, though, the two of you go.
I mean, I had a really great friend, and this was, he was a businessman, and a very, very high up in the business world, and he was a very proper person. Now, I'm not going to say that he was a very proper person. I'll say Andy was a very proper person. And he was never prepared to hear anything bad said about anyone. So the principle of this. A rob, about any rabbi in the law. Whenever anybody spoke to him about a rabbi, he said, I want you to know that this rabbi is my personal friend, whom I greatly admire. I'm telling him what you said immediately. He's got to protect me because of his personal friend. Well, start. But that was his principle.
Whether he really knew the rabbi or not?
Any rabbi. That was his principle. And once there came a certain rabbi to him, I tell you who the rabbi is. Rabbi Polish. And of course, and he was a big Zionist, this businessman, and the Zionist got home, gave him a very handsome donation. The Zionist got home, and gave him a donation and all this, and he takes the money for himself and all this sort of thing. He said, I happen to know this man pretty well, and I know the work he's doing in Israel. I know exactly where all his money goes. I think he's got to protect himself against a person like you. I'm going to give him this. Then he came to me and he said, look here, is it really so? Isn't order there? I hope it is so. but that is, you said whether he knew him or didn't know him. But that is, that was his. He knew how vulnerable a person like that was. He didn't say anything about him. I had a rabbi who was a friend of mine who, whenever he was called to the Torah, made a donation to the shul. The president of the shul let out a rumor. He never pays that donation that he makes. I spoke to him. He said, every Saturday night, I write out the check. When I go to shul in the morning, on the way, I post. I said, right, I've called the treasurer. Spoke to him, said, I get it in. He said, every, I get it at the beginning of every week, I get the check. Now, this person went about saying, how did it reach my ear? The person said, somebody spoke to me about it. I called that person. No. And I called the president, and in his presence he said it. When I was in South Africa, the time before loss, he still didn't believe it. He said, he doesn't pay. I said, but the president, he said, yes, I know, there must be something. One doesn't just speak about these things. Yes, he said, one doesn't, there must have been something there. There must have been something. One doesn't just speak like that. Couldn't do anything about it. Now, I know about how careful this colleague of mine is about that sort of thing. You can say anything about it, man. What can you do? I don't want to hear something about that. You've got to rebut it. On the spot, you see. That's how you deal with it. Yes.
The only
question
I have on that section,
yes,
is why are some of the, what are the more basic and I would think strong urges left out? For instance, eating improperly or improper sexual relations, which they're such a great yitzer for. Why were the three picks that were picked in terms of mishtaker? I can see kohen because it's so pervasive.
Also, I mean, didn't we earlier have a section dealing that was very similar to this? Where it did say that food is such damn love and someone who avoids sexual impropriety makes it a single person to avoid sexual entanglement. Is that in Sassan? That's good stuff.
I'm sorry, I was just surprised to find the bit. Please say it again.
It seems to me an interesting choice of three, of why these three, and why it leaves out, for instance, something that some of our yeters that are so basic and pervasive, like feeding improperly or improper sexual relations, which are such strong, constant drives.
Yes.
Why those aren't mentioned, and why something like She'eino Mishtaker, which would seem to me to be less of a problem than those, is mentioned.
You know, these three really do damage to another person. The person is angry. You do damage to another person when you're angry. You're angry with a person. You do damage to another person. It speaks about mainly about those things. But when it comes to sex,
care is doing damage to another.
Yes, because when you behave very badly, you don't behave normally when you are a shikur. Don't behave normally. You know, people that beat their wives. The wives are particularly afraid when the person's drunk. That is where it happens. And she's very afraid of it. That is the thing. When it comes to matters, sexual matters, the best example you've got of is Yosef. Hayom ro'o ba yones. Ma ro'o hayom atzmeto Yosef. Ocean saw and it fell. What did it see? It saw the Aron HaShelyas. Yosef fled from his mistress, and he left he left his coat in her hands and fled from her. You know what that means? And nobody was about. As a result of that is much more than controlling oneself. That is breaking one's nature. Breaking one's nature, for that Hashem breaks nature. Changes nature. For that Hashem changes nature. The sea can split because of things like that. So it means that without that it would have happened. But if Yosef could do a thing like that, so what's the brain of Rabbanish friend say? She's looking, what can I do here? This is the way it was created. And how was Yosef created? And he could do it. So why can't you do it? Has to do it. So that was, something has got to happen in the world before there can be that type of change of nature. Otherwise they can't be.
So you're saying that that's even more radical than...
This is far more radical. That is far more radical. What that is, that is the greatest ethical now that there is. Far more radical. And if a Yetzer Lala, that's breaking it already. That person, he creates worlds with that. Creates a world with that. All right, but now we've got to move on. But I'll give you an example of other things also how all the Rabbah, yes, we finished off last time, and Kuf Yud Gimel Omid Beis, seven lines from the bottom of the page, I would say. Yes. The Gesh Omid Af Misha Eim Meisav Bachaburu Shel Mitzvah. So this is a case with Amanadi Mina Shomayim, a person who doesn't take part in a Chaburo Shel Mitzvah, and you remember that Rashbam told us what is a Chaburo Shel Mitzvah, a Bris Mila, the Sesudo of a Bris Mila. Doesn't take part in that, or he doesn't take part in
Cohen
to a bus Cohen. It's a very special sinker. Cohen to a bus Cohen. A very special. And doesn't take part in that. So, these are Menadim Asomi Nakamayim. One has to take part in this sort of thing.
He doesn't go.
There's a brief Mila with a Sa'ud and he doesn't go.
We just talking then, right? What?
he's been invited.
He's been invited, so he knows at this point you can't.
There are cases when sometimes a person can't go. A person is working. And you know, Rosh Hashanah is going to be 2 days. And Sukkot is going to be 4 days. And how many working days are there in the month altogether? And he can't take off, you see, he can't just go. Well, of course, one understands that. A person just who doesn't go, this is a very serious matter. Got to be a chaburush or mitzvah. Okay? So, Menadin Osef in Oshemach. We go on from there. Omer Rabba bar Barchono, Omer Rabbi Shmuel bar Marto. Omer Rab. Now, Marto is not Martha. Then why some people think it's Martha. It's not Martha. It's Marto. Omer Rabba bar Barchono, Omer Rabbi Shmuel bar Marto. Omer Rab. Mishum Rabbi Yosef ish Hutzo. Man is called Rabbi Yosef ish Hutzo. A man of Hutzor. Hutzor is obviously the name of a place. Minayin she'ein shewerim bekalviyim. Now, the pshat of the Rashbam for Kalviyim is a very nice pshat, and he justifies it, and that is a person who doesn't look at astrology and ask an astrology what's going to happen to him, what's going to take place that month. Doesn't resort to that.
Is that like the Chaldean? Chaldean.
I don't know what it is, but that is what the Rashbam gives that explanation of it.
Chaldean is actually the astrologer.
That is the way the Rashbam explains it.
The Rashbam is someone who looks at stars?
Well, yes. Kadim Bale Ov, Kach Pirish Rabbeinu, the Rashi says it's Bale Ov. This is with witchcraft. Below the hero, he says, I don't like it. He croaks in the head here, I'll give no elo ovos, because there's a posset that speaks about that. Vanisho mati chosim bekochovim, stargazers. The chayim ikor, and that seems to me the important part of it, the important principle. So it's those astrologers that look at the stars and say, this is what's going to happen to you during this month. If you're born in this month, that's what it says there. He says.
So I don't understand how Rashbam.
From where do we know that one doesn't resort to astrology? That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
From where do we know it? Shenehemar, because it says in the Torah, Tomim Tirye im Hashem Elokecho. You shall be whole with Hashem Elokecho. So, and if you look at it, I'll explain it to you a little bit more. So, whatever happens to you, you are talking to Hashem. So, what does it matter? What does it matter what's going to happen tomorrow? What do we want to know for? You believe in Hashem. And if it mustn't happen, it won't happen, even if the stars say so. So then it won't happen. And of course, we say there's a Gemara in Shabbos that says, "Ein mazal lehitzroel." Bless you. Ein mazal lehitzroel. Now, the mazal is the astrology. Good evening, the class. The mazal is the astrology. You say, you can't, for Israel, there isn't that. Which seems to suggest for a goy there is.
It's luck. Doesn't mazal the same word as luck?
It really means the muzzle. The muzzle is the constellation. The muzzle is the constellation. It doesn't affect a Jew. It doesn't affect a Jew. You see? Now, to me, this is very far-reaching. We were speaking about it at the beginning of the Shia this evening. We are all affected by the surroundings in which we find ourselves, by the environment, in the life in which we're all affected by that. So, a motherly soil, a Jew isn't affected by it. What does it mean a Jew isn't affected by it? He need not be affected by it. A goy can't help himself. But a Jew need not be affected by it. He's got the Torah. And he lives in a, if he doesn't live in the world of the Torah, he lives in the Dalit Amos of the Torah. He lives in the four elves of the Alocha. So whatever happens in the world, he's not affected by it. A mazal de Yisroel. So what you see, the stars say that about him. You've got a very good example of it today, where sociologists get together. There is a in America, a organization, a world organization for Jewry, what is it called?
American Jewish Congress.
Yes, sir. Say it again, please.
American Jewish Congress.
The American Jewish Congress. You see. Now, the American Jewish Congress, a little while ago, engaged a team of sociologists and demographers to work out what is the position of Jewry in South America. And they did a very interesting thing. I'm sorry, in the United States. They did a very interesting thing. They went onto the campuses. But they did something even better. They made a special point on going onto the campus of Brandeis. Now, Brandeis is ostensibly to be a Jewish university. Mm-hmm. Jewish professors are Jewish, even Jewish there. And they start now, I had the figures, but it was something like this. At Brandeis, 74% saw nothing wrong in marrying out. And if it was necessary, they what's wrong? 74%. Now, this is the whole thing is Jewish. You follow? Now, so they sit together, they've got statisticians, and they've got demographers, and they've got sociologists, and they settle down together. And they say that in 18 years' time, there won't be, you won't, on the campuses, you won't find Jews, won't be, on the campuses, there won't be any Jews. And in 20 years' time, you won't have there won't really be any Jews. Now, I thought that they'd stopped saying that. Now, when you, historically, demographically, statistically, sociologically, psychologically, they're right. That's absolutely right. Ein Madrali Soya, the Jew doesn't fall under that. The Jew doesn't fall under that. You see, now, they did a very interesting thing. Jews today, don't Orthodox Jews, Torah Jews certainly, don't want to send their children to universities. They're afraid. So they keep their children away from universities. So you don't need to sort that type of Jew in the university. They didn't go into the yeshivas to find out whether in the yeshivas, the students in the yeshivas want to marry out of them or they don't want to. They didn't go, you see, they didn't go. And if you would ask them, they would say, but look, yeah, they're so few. You know, I was asked the other day, how many Lubavitcher do I think that there are in America? Would I venture a guess? I said, of course I'd venture a guess. I would say, conservatively speaking, 120,000. Person said, 10,000. I said, so few to make so much noise. yes. Pardon? But it is like that.
And so?
Yes. 10,000 the whole of the state. So I said, okay, give me a breakdown. How many are there in Canada? He said, between 1,000 and 1,500. I said, in that case, at least 10,000. Because in not Canada, in California. I said, in California, I know there aren't 1,500 in Barbiture. That I know. Can't find 1,500. You can't find 1,000 in California. So that means that the whole... said, yes. He said, they've got sympathizers, they've got supporters. Lubavitch in the movement? 10,000. Well, what could you do? But it's quite true. It's the leaven in the bread. How much leaven do you put in the bread? I watched my wife putting baking challah. She puts a pinch of salt into the challah, and that's all that's necessary. A pinch of salt. And I was once making some porridge for myself, and my wife said, don't forget the salt. So I take a teaspoon. What are you doing? I put half a teaspoon. She said, don't put the teaspoon away. It takes me a few days. That's all that's necessary. Depends what it is, what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
You can't deal with salt the same as you can with flour. Sometimes you can't deal with salt. All right, but that's the way it works, right? So, Tomin Tiri Imashem Elatecho, you've got to. We don't ask astrologers. Because Tomin Tiri Imashem Lekecho. And this is And this is a deen. And it's very bad to go and work according to astrology, what the astrologer said. I once knew a Jew who used to buy on the stock exchange according to astrology and sell and everything according to astrology. This is very bad. Look what happens to a person. Can you see how he loses his trust in Hashem more and more? Pardon?
If what?
If
it's even trained, they
go wrong. Where would you
go? Brother, yes. What was the involvement in the Kabbalists with astrology? Did they make predictions about the future, or were they just trying to understand how the universe works?
There is something in it. But, I mean, you can see, when Paro said, he said, when Moshe left, he said, look here, I know that, go, I know what's going to happen with you. So what did he do? He said, like a father, can't stop the child from going and putting his hand on the stove. He said, right, I'll let him do it once and he'll never do it again. Let him do it. So Paro says, right, you go. When he sees them wandering, he says, this is it already. There's going to be, they're going to lose it there. So what happens afterwards? They have a brief mila somewhere. That is the blood. He saw the blood. That was the blood, the brief mila. So there was something, but he didn't understand it. It's something quite different. There are certain things that are there in the universe and things that have got to happen. But the way they're going to happen, and what way, and the different ways they can happen, and they're completely at loggerheads with one another, they're completely, all these things can happen. You follow?
Well, wasn't it also, Rabbi, when Paro was relieved, when the astrologers told him, don't worry, with all the children who were passing into the Nile, we see that the man who's going to save the Jews was also thrown into the Nile. But he'd been sent in a basket, and he couldn't see that really...
I mean, all those things, Moshion Shel Yisroel is through water. Eventually, Jews will be saved through water. They were saved through water eventually. And there was nothing that he could do about it. But the ways it could happen, it could be so many different ways. You follow what I'm saying, Don?
No, absolutely. But my question is, presumably, when I understand that there was a tradition of trying to understand this phenomenon,
yes,
Jewish history. And I'm just asking, I presume they limited it to understanding the dynamics of how these things work without making predictions.
Oh, no, no predictions whatsoever. Oh, they didn't make it. There are predictions in Kabbalah. For example, there was a prediction in Kabbalah that in the year Top Rage, which must have been about 1840, is that possible? 1840 Top Rage.
Mm-hmm.
It is 144 years ago.
Yeah.
Is it 1840? Now, in Kabbalah, there's a prediction in 1840, there will be the Mayonos HaChokhmah will begin to be open. That is, there will be great opportunities for Chokhmah. 1840. Then there was a subsequent prediction, but this I haven't seen, this I was told. But the top phrase that I've seen, that that was 141. There was another one, 44 years ago. There will be again a terrific opening of the possibilities of wisdom. 44 years. You know what happened in the last 44 years? Since 1940. Started off with the sulfur drugs. And then with the antibiotics. I don't have to tell you just what has happened since then. And I don't remember who it was who said that. Might have been the will of the Gaon, might have been the Chaim Volozhiner, said that if we are up to it, all that will go into Torah. We will understand things in Torah that we haven't been able to understand. If not, it will go into the general chokhmah. Says when it's gone into the general chokhmah. It's gone into the general chokhmah. I think I told you that Professor Lehman spent a Shabbos with us a few months ago. And he was the one that was engaged by Israel to make the first computer there. You know, I told you the story, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
With Ben Gurion, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So Ben Gurion said, he said, tell me what this will be able, in 20 years' time, where will we stand with it? So he made a prediction. He said what he predicted would be in 20 years' time, he said, was realized in 5 years' time. He said he could never believe anything like that. But him is in 5 years' time.
How is this? Professor Lehmann?
Professor Lehmann, L-E-H-M-A-N. So these are the things that have been going on. Now, John says, how they make those predictions. But when they make, they don't make it as predictions. They make it as the world is going towards a certain goal. And these are things that have to happen in order for it to reach that goal. And these are the things that's going to happen. Now, as I say, 140 years ago, that I've seen. Now, just this long before that.
Happen every 1,000 years?
No. First of all, just it refers to this particular to the, it refers particular to the 6,000. That these are the things that are going to happen in the 6,000. First particular, these are the things that are going to happen. And I want to tell you now, it's just uncanny. In 1932, when my uncle was beginning to discuss where I should go to learn. This was in London. So that Leib Gurwitsch, the Chassidic philosopher, was in London, and he said, you know, I think that you should go to here. You see, there are a lot of Americans in here. I said, well, how are they? He said, they are excellent. They are very good. They've got good heads. They learn well, and they are very good people. Lots of Americans in here. He said, it would perhaps be a good thing, you've got American things, it would be easier for you to integrate, you see. So I was so surprised that the Americans were there. He said, I'll tell you something. Now, that Leib was a Talmud Lubach of Rebelville. Rebelville was the son of the Chaim Bisker. Once you're dealing with the Chaim Bisker, you're dealing with the Yosha Be'er. And the Yosha Be'er, I think, was the grandson of Chaim Elohim. And the Chaim Elohim was the Talmud Lubach of the Vilna Gaon. So you've got it all there. So he said, now, he told me this in 1932, that they came into my lodge and she was just after midnight, and they found the Chaim Elohim crying. I said, why are you weeping? He said, the Torah will have 10 goals and 10 exiles. And he reckons out. First exile was in Yavne, and then in Usha, and then in Bobel, and then in Africa, and then in Spain, and then in France, and then in Germany. He reckoned out that the ninth Golus was where they were in Eastern Europe. He said the tenth Golus will be in America. Now, he must have said that 1820. When I heard it in 1932, I couldn't believe it. I didn't believe it. I stood myself saying to the neighbor, I said, how can it be? How could that be? In 1932, he said, that's what the Chaim Elohim said. Yeah, I mean, it's not predictions, this, you see. I mean, these people have these sort of things. People have this sort of thing. My uncle used to call it a chush horeach. He didn't call it Nebuah. He didn't call it Ruach HaKodesh. He called it a chush horeach. That's a sense of smell. And something happened to my uncle once, and he never told anybody about it. And the Tzfas Emes, who died 80 years ago, he knew about it. He knew about it. And my uncle, he knew.
Without having known.
He didn't know my uncle in those days. He didn't know him.
He was a
fast emissary. He wasn't. He was a very great London. I mean, his grandfather was a Chidushe Horim.
And
the Chidushe Horim was a Geira Rebbe. And he didn't want to become a Geira. He said, I'm not a Rebbe. He said, that's what we've got to be. He said, Avraham Avinu is our Rebbe. He said, I'm not a Rebbe. So, you can't help it. So he became a fiduciary, and that could be the end of this process. These people. So but my uncle was asked, how did he know it and became known? And evidently it became known because of their family. So my uncle was asked, how did he know it? He said, those people had a chush for Reach. He wouldn't say Nebuah. He wouldn't say Ruach HaKodesh. They had a chush a Reach. It's interesting. I come into my home. I know what my wife is cooking. I don't go into the kitchen. She won't allow me into the kitchen. How do I know what she's cooking? I know it. I've got a chush of Reach. I've got a sense of smell. I've got a sense of smell on the roof here. So there are all these things, you see. But Don, do you follow what I'm saying? This is not just a prediction. We don't believe in that. There are certain things that have happened. This was important to know. Now, I must say, in 1932, I didn't believe it in 1932. Now I believe it. Big deal. Now I believe it. But it's taught me a lot of things. It's taught me a lot of things. All right. Now let us go on, please. Says the Gemara. Says the Gemara. Hayod uminayim. From where do we know that Hayodeya b'chaveiro shehu godel mimenu afilu b'dovor echod shechayv linov b'kovet. From where do we know that if a person is greater than another person, even in one thing, shechayv linov b'kovet, that you've got to give him kovet. Shenemar. Because it says in the Posuk, now this is Aramaic, and if we've got the Posuk, we can see how it is. It says like this. Kol kovel diruach yakirove. Anyone who has got a extra spirit in him. Umalko ashit al komose al kol malchuso. The king raises him up to set him over all the kingdom. So, kol kovel diruach